And you're listening to WHUS 91.7 FM. I am Fran Storch, and you are about to hear Radio Naturopath. So, for the next hour, you can be listening to the call-in talk show about health and natural medicine. I've got a co-host. He's over there, Ron Maniza.
Hi.
If you'd like to participate in the conversation about natural medicine, you can call us at 860-486-9487. That's 860-486-9487. You can also text us at that same number, 860-486-9487. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, check out our podcast at www.whus.org. Go to the talk header and click on Radio Naturopath. You can also check out my Facebook page, Fran Storch ND, Naturopathic Physician, Radio Naturopath, and on Twitter and Instagram, at Fran Storch ND. So it's a glorious day today. It's one of those top 10 beautiful days of the year. It's very nice out. And so it's really great to be here with all of you today.
It's gorgeous out.
Yeah, it's really nice. It's a nice day to get outside and make your vitamin D. And that's one of the things we're going to talk about today, vitamin D, which is a thing you make when you get outside. But the first thing we're going to talk about, we have a question that's left over from last week. Ron from Mansfield, a different Ron from Mansfield, because you're Ron from
Mansfield. Not this Ron from Mansfield, no. Different one.
Yeah. Ron from Mansfield called and wanted to know how to get your red blood cell count back up after having had babesiosis. So that's an interesting question. So this is not specifically how do you increase your red blood cell count, but how do you increase it after having had babesiosis? So first of all, what's babesiosis? Babesiosis, unfortunately, is a tick-borne illness, and it's distinct from a bunch of the other tick-borne illnesses in that it's an intracellular parasite. So it's kind of like malaria that way, and in fact, the drugs that are used to treat it are similar to drugs that they use. They use antimalarials to treat it, the drugs that also treat malaria, like etovaquone and they use Mepron and etovaquone, and those are actually antimalarials. So what we use somewhat different drugs than we use to treat actual Lyme disease. There's different herbs than we use to treat Lyme disease. We use some herbs that treat parasites, and the big one that we use is Artemisia. So Artemisia annua is one of the wormwoods, and it's a wormwood that will kill worms, is in addition to amoebas and other kinds of intracellular parasites and other parasites altogether. So so that is one of the things that we use. And, you know, when we're treating babesiosis, for us, it's not just about killing the parasite. We want to help to build you up altogether. So one of the things that we do is tick-borne illnesses, whether it's Lyme disease, anaplasma, ehrlichiosis, babesiosis, Bartonella, or even Rocky Mountain spotted fever, all of those take a lot of effort on your body's part to try to get rid of them. And what the drugs mostly do, they do some killing of the microorganisms, but a lot of what they do is just slow them down, and your immune system has to participate. So the people that suffer with chronic tick-borne illness generally have some compromise to their immune systems, because your immune system actually has to go out and fight Lyme spirochetes, has to fight, it's difficult for your body to fight parasites, but there are some mechanisms by which it does that, as well as the other microorganisms that cause the tick-borne illnesses. So if your immune system is as healthy as possible, people get Lyme disease. I theoretically think that people get tick-borne illness all the time. People are bitten by ticks all the time. It's very hard to always know if you've been bitten by a tick because they're so tiny, and a lot of the time they don't leave a rash. So you don't get, and some people, I think, get tick-borne illness and they don't get symptoms. And that is just something I see. The reason I think this is because I will often test people for tick-borne illnesses. I'll find that they have some antibodies to various tick-borne illnesses, and I'll ask them, so did you have anaplasma? Did you have ehrlichiosis? Did you have babesiosis? Not that I know of. That happens a lot.
That's wild. So they could just be walking around with it running dormant in their body, kind of? Or is it?
Not dormant. It's just that their immune systems took care of it. You know, if you have a really strong immune system and you're exposed to a cold, your immune system's going to go after it and shut it down before you actually get sick.
Okay.
It doesn't, because for your immune system to really kick in and make you feel sick, Your viral load has to get over a certain level. And if you can keep your viral load down, I mean, you've got viruses in you right now. We've all got viruses, bacteria, fungi, parasites in us all the time. It's just a matter of how well our immune system keeps those at bay. Hmm. And if your lymphatics are working well, the conduits that carry the white portion of our blood, it carries lymphatic fluid as well as white blood cells, and it runs in tandem with your veins. You have lymphatic vessels that run alongside your veins, and they carry those fluids out, and they ultimately dump into a big lymph vessel in your chest, and then dumps into the vena cava, which is the last vein before it goes into your lungs to get clean. Your blood goes into your lungs to get cleaned, and then ultimately the lymph vessels run through your liver, and then any toxins that are going through the lymph vessels, they get processed, detoxified, cleaned out there. So the lymphatic system is very important, and one of the things you do when somebody has tick-borne illness is you support the lymphatic system. And to support the lymphatic system, the number one simple thing you can do is drink water, drink lots of water. The more fluid there is in all of the systems in your body that include water, the more efficiently they can function. If the lymphatic fluid is thinner because you've drunk a lot of water, it's going to carry all of those toxins and all of those white blood cells more efficiently and more quickly through your entire body. So you're going to get all of your fluids running more quickly and therefore many more times through your organs of detoxification. So that's helpful. So now one of the things that can happen when you have babesiosis is your red blood cell count can go down. You can become, which is called anemia. And that can happen because, one, the microorganisms themselves multiply in the red blood cells and the red blood cells blow up. And so you lose some. And the other thing is your immune system goes after them because the parasites are inside the red blood cells. So you become anemic. So you take whatever medication you took, your Mepron, your Etovaquone, whatever med you took, hydroxychloroquine, Plaquenil, and you take your meds, and at some point you and your doctor will decide whether you're done with your meds, or you and your naturopath or other herbal practitioner will decide whether and for how long you should be taking other antimicrobials. One we like to use is Artemisia, and then I like to use Cowden herbs, and the Cowden herbs that I like to use, Anula, Quina, Hotunia, all can help with babesiosis. Those are particular herbs in the Cowden system that mostly come from the rainforest, and it's a special system that you use. So Cowden system is very nice because it's very simple, drop-wise doses, and you support killing of the unwanted microbes as well as cleaning out the nerves and also supporting the lymphatics and supporting the liver, lymphs, and kidneys to help with detoxification. So in terms of getting your red blood cells back up, you have to determine, first of all, if the babesia is truly gone. And depending, and the thing is, if a person is still symptomatic, I might still consider treating them, whether I would treat them with pharmaceuticals. Now, naturopaths in the state can't treat with pharmaceuticals, so you have to take that up with your preferably tick-borne illness literate doctor. And the other thing is, do you continue to treat with herbal antimicrobials? I would treat someone until they were feeling well. And if they were still anemic, I would probably still treat them. I would probably still treat them as though they had babesia, just, at least herbally, because you don't want to take any chances. And you can do that while you're trying to rebuild the red blood cells. So things to rebuild red blood cells. One of the things you want to do is you want to look to see if the person has adequate iron in their bodies. And if their iron is on the low side, even if it's not abnormally low, if iron levels and ferritin levels, ferritin being the storage protein that carries iron through the body, and then you also have a check of serum iron, you check those. And if the person is either frankly low or in the lower end of the reference range, you might give some iron to take or suggest that people consume more foods with iron in them. There's a lot of leafy greens that have extra iron in them, and nuts and seeds have iron in them. And, of course, red meat has iron in it. And if you don't consume red meat, you're going to get some iron from chicken and fish. If you don't do animal protein at all, then you have to look at either supplementation or look at consuming nuts and seeds and leafy greens. And you'll get some iron that way. The contention there is that when you do your vegetable sources of iron, it's not heme iron. It's not, the iron isn't carried in the heme group. So what a heme group means, the protein in your red blood cells that carries iron and also therefore oxygen to all of the cells of your body is called hemoglobin. And it's called hemoglobin because it's a globular protein. It's kind of round, and it has a heme ring in it at the center of that. And heme ring just means it's a specific chemical conformation. And at the center of that ring is iron. And so the neat thing is when you consume anything with chlorophyll in it, so anything that's a leafy green, any green vegetable, it's going to have chlorophyll in it. And chlorophyll is the same compound, except in the center of it, it has magnesium instead of iron. So you can use the heme rings from chlorophyll to make new hemoglobin for you. And so eating leafy greens is going to help you, help enrich you and nourish you and help you with the chlorophyll so you can help to rebuild your hemoglobin, which then your red blood cells are going to see that, and they're going to use that to create more red blood cells. And So if you consume red meat, then the hemoglobin and myoglobin is already made for you. When you eat it, that you get iron in the heme form because you're actually eating all the things that are in the muscle of an animal. So you're getting heme rings with iron in them already. And so it's less work for your body to do. And that's as long as your body is able to process red meat. If you're a person that can't digest red meat well, then that's not going to work for you. But if it does, it is a very easy way to get heme iron on board, and that can be helpful. So that's one of the things you do. You eat red meat if you're not averse to it in some way, whether physically, spiritually, or politically. If it's not your thing, you don't have to do it. You can just take iron supplements. But I would not take the iron supplements unless you knew that you were low or low normal, and you would want your doctor to test for that. That would be a good thing to do. In the meantime, eating those other foods, like we said, red meat or iron-containing foods, and also anything with chlorophyll in it, that's how you're going to rebuild your red blood cells. And so the other thing you're going to do is rest. Rest is good. Because the more activity you get, the more you're going to use your blood cells for whatever you're doing. And so the more rest you get, the body gets time. Because one of the things that happens is when you're very active, your body's going to respond to whatever you're doing. Your body's like, okay, she wants a run from here to there. So we're going to do everything we can to make a run from here to there. So if you're when you go for a run, or you go for a bike ride, or you're very active all day, or you're stressed out at work, you're going to be using your red blood cells all day. You're going to be using your blood to power your entire body. And the more you use them, the less time there is for repair. Your body's going to focus on being in the in high sympathetic tone. The autonomic nervous system is going to be functioning so that it puts you into fight or flight. And it's not going to be as well in rest and digest. The more rest you get, the more things are shut down. It's like I keep talking about shutting down the highway. When you shut down the highway, it's a lot easier to repair the highway. So if the highway's closed down or the airport's closed down, we should shout out to that too. you can repair the airport. You can repair the highway better. So if you're sleeping, your body's going to lie there. Your bone marrow is going to be more active, making more red blood cells. They're going to get out, and they're not going to have a whole lot to do. So you're going to have an opportunity to just create more red blood cells. So one of the things you do is to get rest. Your body is always making erythropoietin. Erythropoietin is the famous EPO that they use in bike racing. But, normal people make that. It's
sports enhancement.
It's people use it for spores enhancement, but if you didn't have EPO in your body, you would die.
Right.
EPO is something you make. It's made by the bones, and it stimulates the bone marrow to make red blood cells. So you want it to be able to be active and stimulate the production of new healthy red blood cells for
right.
you. And the more you rest, the easier that's going to be for your body. So so another chalk up to, if you have a condition that puts you down, you got to rest. You got to rest. You got to sleep. You got to lie around. You got to do less stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's basically it. You get your red blood cell count back up by resting, eating red meat if you can or want to, by eating things with heme groups like leafy greens, by eating stuff with iron in it, you know, sunflower seeds, pumpkin seeds, peanuts, I would continue, if you're still anemic from having had babesiosis, personally, I would continue to treat it, whether pharmaceutically or with natural medicine. And that's what I got to say about that.
And you can also use cast iron pans.
Right, yes, yeah. That's another way to get
cooking,
iron in.
Cooking and cast iron, especially yes. things like if you're cooking like spaghetti sauce or something like that, it absorbs a lot of the iron.
Yes, and again, you're only going to do that if you've been tested for your ferritin and iron and you're found to be low or low normal. If you have hemochromatosis, which is a condition where you store iron too much, you're not going to be doing that. You wouldn't help this
right.
by eating extra iron-containing foods. In fact, eating extra iron-containing foods if you have hemochromatosis is not a good idea. So there you go. I hope that was helpful. All right. So we encourage you to call in. If you'd like to call in, the number to call is 860-486-9487. That's 860-486-9487. You can text us at 860-486-9487. We would love to hear from you, and we would love to answer your questions here on Radio Naturopath. So let's see. We are we were going through the alphabet in terms of in vitamins. And so we're up to vitamin C today.
So, oh, yeah, that's right. We were doing vitamins.
Yes, vitamin C is cool stuff. We did the A's and B's last week, and
right.
now we're up to vitamin C.
Cool.
Vitamin C is, but everybody needs a little vitamin C. One of the fun things I talk about, you know, in the Thread City Cyclers, we have a C ride, and a lot of bike clubs have a C ride.
Mm-hmm.
And I think of that as vitamin C because I find the C ride and the C plus ride to be very nourishing because they're... Well, they're not as fast as the other rides, so the focus tends to be on pleasure and enjoyment and slowing down and watching the, you know, looking at the leaves and chatting and, you know, looking at your surroundings. So I find the C rides to be more restful than some of the other levels of rides. So you can benefit. So it's a way to benefit from vitamin C. You know, I find that the sea rides can be challenging as well. I mean, somebody who's an absolute beginner is going to have a difficult time riding on them. But
right.
but on the other hand, if you've been riding for a long time, the sea ride is healing. And I find that even the people who regularly ride the C and C plus rides, they're in it for pleasure and they're not as much in it to compete and show off. They're in it for healing. And when I go on those rides, I feel those things. I feel pleasure and healing. And I really enjoy the people on them. So shout out to you if you ride on a C or C plus ride, and that's your ride. That's very
yeah.
cool. I see you as nutritious and literally nourishing to the adrenals, which is one of the functions of vitamin C. Okay, it is a water-soluble vitamin. Your body doesn't store it. So you have to be consuming it all the time. You can get it from a lot of foods, but guess what? You have to get it from produce. And if you're not a big fruit and vegetable person, you can be vitamin D deficient. Vitamin C deficient. Vitamin C is found in a lot of things. Of course, it's found in citrus fruits, but it's also found in broccoli, Brussels sprouts, tomatoes, strawberries, peppers. Every kind of pepper is a good source of vitamin C. And so vitamin C is important for the collagen in your body. Vitamin C is necessary for collagen repair. So anything that has collagen in it needs vitamin C. That's going to be your muscles, your skin, your tendons, your ligaments, all of your organs, especially your heart and your blood vessels. They all need vitamin C. Vitamin C, we were just talking about iron. Vitamin C enhances iron absorption in the body. Vitamin C, there's collagen in your bones and teeth, so you need vitamin C for those too. It is an antioxidant, and so antioxidants block free radical damage. So free radicals are when you have compounds in your body that break apart at the level of the electrons, where the electrons, compounds are missing an electron, and when they're in that form, they look for other electrons, and what they try to do is they try to steal it from your body, from your tissues in your body. And so when you have free radical damage, your body has to go and repair it. But once you have free radical damage, this molecule that's in your blood vessel is going to be short an electron. So it's going to steal it from the next molecule, which is going to steal it from the next molecule. And before you know it, you have tissue damage. So when you consume antioxidants, they resupply those electrons so your body isn't deficient and it puts them back in. Donates those electrons so that your body isn't eating itself up, and so that's how antioxidants work. They actually prevent tissue damage, and they not only do they prevent tissue damage, but they prevent damage at the cellular level and actually at the molecular level. So if you have enough antioxidants on board, you can protect yourself from damage to genes. And that's part of what antioxidants do. They protect genes and help with healthy gene expression. So it's not just that the vitamin C is going to protect you from having a heart attack or protect you from having varicose veins. It's going to actually protect you from having poor gene expression. Your genes are going to express themselves more healthfully. And all antioxidants have some level of that. You can be vitamin C deficient. You can be deficient enough to have symptoms from it. And remember, they used to talk about scurvy and scurvy young lads. And back in the day, they hadn't figured out what caused scurvy. When they would see that people on boats,
sailors that were out at sea for a long time would get it.
The reason they were getting it is they weren't eating anything with vitamin C in it.
They had no source of vitamin C.
And then somebody figured it out and figured out that, boy, if you ate citrus fruits, that this wouldn't happen. So that's why they call British people limeys.
Oh.
Do you remember that?
Right,
yeah,
right.
They call them limeys because somebody figured it out. So then British sailors went somewhere tropical.
They'd take limes with them.
Yes, limes and lemons and citrus fruits. So they would call them limeys. That's where that comes from.
So how much vitamin C can you take in one day?
Yeah, so that's an interesting question. And so there's the RDA of vitamins, and then there's the therapeutic dose of vitamins. So, and they are different. So if you want to keep yourself from deficiency, you're looking at about 330 milligrams of vitamin C in the form of ascorbic acid. All right.
Okay.
For therapeutic doses, it kind of depends on the person and depends what's going on. If somebody doesn't absorb well, we might give them a highly absorbable form of vitamin C that's it's food complex. Like if we were going to give a supplement, for example, we might give something that's food complex to enhance absorption and might also have bioflavonoids in it, which foods that have vitamin C in them often have bioflavonoids in them as well. Bioflavonoids are other lovely compounds that are antioxidants and strengthening to tissues. So when you eat an orange or a banana and you peel that orange or banana, you look inside and there's that stringy white stuff.
Right.
And then the inside of the rind has that white pithy stuff in it.
Yep.
That's where all the bioflavonoids are. So if you
in the white stuff, or
yeah,
in, yeah,
in the white stuff, and you
really?
Know how the orange or clementine or lemon or lime or whatever you got going on, name your citrus fruit. You can peel it in sections,
yeah.
Right? And
yeah.
Then you see the sections. It's sectioned off by pithy white stuff, and then
right.
The actual section has
sure.
Little sections in it with pithy white stuff. Bioflavonoids. That's where the bioflavonoids are.
So you should be eating that white stuff.
It's good for you, and that is a reason why. You know, if you're making recipes, people don't generally, it's not conventional to, when you're eating a lemon, to sit and eat the rind.
Right.
However, we tend to use rind, lemon rind, orange rind, we call it zest,
right.
In recipes.
Right.
So if you get an organic orange, lemon, grapefruit, whatever, and you want to use the the rind, you can put it into recipes, and it makes your recipes taste really good, even because the rind tends to be bitter.
Yeah, it is.
And yet it still imparts those lovely volatile citrus oils into the food that you're eating.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you have organic rind, it's actually very good for you. It has bioflavonoids in it. Hmm. You're going to get some bioflavonoids by actually eating the orange, but you're actually going to get more from the rind.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, it's in that white pithy stuff. There's more white pithy stuff in the rind.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you...
That makes sense.
So if you're making a... that's something we should think about. When you're making nice fish for yourself, not just to squeeze the lemon juice over it with the actual lemon, but
take some of the rind.
Grate some rind over it. Yeah.
Good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Good idea.
Yeah. So, and it's kind of better if it's organic, because then it's not going to have pesticides on it. And in any case, unfortunately, the definition of organic, when you're talking about governments, doesn't always mean no pesticides. It means no pesticides after a certain point. So if you're going to use citrus zest, it's a good idea to use a mild soap and clean off that fruit before you use the zest. You know, you can use a mild soap. You can get mild soaps that are intended for produce wash, and you can use that. You can also use a mild soap that's, if you get it from the health food store, that's like a citrus-based soap, and you can clean that off, and you're going to get off most of the pesticide that's on there. Then you can use the zest. It's very nice. And so it's unusual to be severely deficient in vitamin C, although it can happen. And one of the first signs is your gums start to bleed. And if your gums are bleeding, that means you're having tendon and ligament and other deficiencies elsewhere in your body. One of the ways that you mess up your vitamin C level is smoking cigarettes. It lowers the amount in vitamin C. People who smoke have a higher need for vitamin C, because they're hitting their bodies with major, oxidative damage all the time. Every time they suck in on a cigarette, you're taking in all these burning compounds and chemicals that are causing oxidative damage. And they're causing oxidative damage first to everywhere the smoke goes. Everywhere the smoke literally goes. So we're talking about the lips, the tongue, the entire mouth, your digestive system, your stomach, because the smoke does get down there. And of course, your respiratory system. It's all lined with collagen, and that all that collagen needs vitamin C. And then once you inhale those compounds, they do get into your blood. And once they get into your blood, now all those free radicals are exposed to your cardiovascular system. So, of course, you're prone to cardiovascular damage when you smoke cigarettes. And vitamin C can help to protect against that. Another thing that can help to protect against oxidative damage from smoking cigarettes is
drinking? No.
No. Not doing it?
Not doing it.
Quitting smoking.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
That helps.
Yes. Yes. If you are concerned about oxidative damage due to cigarette smoking, you can not smoke, and that will take care of the oxidative damage due to cigarette smoking.
Remarkable.
Yeah.
And also stay away from those who are smoking near you.
Right.
Which
well,
is a
that's
big deal.
A bad it is because.
It's a really big deal.
Really
so
big
if
deal.
You think that you're safe because you're not smoking and yet you're living with or working with people that are smoking, you're in bad shape.
It's true. The secondhand smoke is bad too.
Yep.
And the more you're exposed to it, one of the issues is like people who smoke cigarettes, they have a filter, but you don't. They're blowing the
right.
smoke out of
sure.
you.
Well, sure.
And the smoke that they blow out of their mouths has been filtered, but the smoke that's coming out of the end of the cigarette is not filtered.
The burning ember, yeah,
right.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
Mind you, that smoke, the person who's smoking is affected by that smoke too. The one, mm-hmm. the stuff that's coming out of the end. So, it's not a winning situation. So if you're vitamin C deficient, you might have dry and splitting hair, just like what we said, gingivitis, gum inflammation and bleeding gums, rough, dry, scaly skin. You can, your decreased wound healing, easy bruising, nosebleeds, and immune issues. You know, you're going to get more colds and flus.
Sure.
You get more colds and flus for a couple of reasons, because one of the things vitamin C does is it attaches to white blood cells and induces them to work harder. So white blood cells will work better in the presence of vitamin C. So you're going to get less infections, or you're going to fight infections off quicker if you've got vitamin C on board, because the white blood cells are going to work more efficiently. The other thing is that all those linings and coverings of your respiratory system, where you get your colds and flus and bronchitises,
that's a funny word.
Have collagen. They're lined with collagen. So yeah. There's plenty of vitamin C. If you have plenty of vitamin C, you're going to strengthen those linings, the lining of your nose and your esophagus, but also all of your entire respiratory system is going to be strengthened by that vitamin C. So you can get high blood pressure if you don't have enough vitamin C. Of course you can, because your blood vessels are not going to be as resilient. The quality of the collagen is not going to be as good. So when blood goes through it, you're going to have more turbulent blood flow, and the blood is not going to bounce through it as well. So your blood vessels are going to tend to be more tight. So more vitamin C can strengthen your blood vessels, and they'll work better. You get better circulation through your entire body. Cardiovascular disease. You're going to have more cardiovascular disease if you don't have enough vitamin C. It doesn't lower cholesterol, but it protects arteries against damage. So if cholesterol goes down due to vitamin C, it would be indirect. And how it would happen is simply because if you've got more vitamin C around, you're exposed to free radicals all the time. In the process of metabolizing, when you're metabolizing in your body, there's all kinds of chemical processes that happen in your body: buildup, breakdown, repair, metabolism for energy. There's oxidative stress all the time. So if you have more vitamin C around, you're going to protect yourself from the oxidative damage just from your everyday body processes. When you run your electron transport chain in the mitochondria of your cells, you are causing oxidation is happening. That's what's happening. So you have to replenish those electrons that get used in your electron transport chain. So you have to be eating antioxidants to make that happen. So the more antioxidants you get, so we're talking about the number one place you're going to get your vitamin C is vegetables and fruit. Vegetables and fruit, vegetables and fruit.
I have a top 10 list here if you'd like it.
Of vitamin C.
Foods you can eat.
Foods that are high in vitamin C.
Vitamin C, yeah.
Okay, hit me.
Number one, oranges. One large orange, 82 milligrams.
Yeah.
Okay. Number two, peppers. Half a cup chopped raw, 95 milligrams. Uh-huh. Number three is kale. One cup of kale, 80 milligrams.
Mm-hmm.
Number four, Brussels sprouts. A half a cup of cooked is 48 milligrams.
Yeah.
Number five is broccoli. A half a cup cooked is 51 milligrams.
Yeah, pretty good.
Number six is strawberries. Half a cup, 42 milligrams. Mm-hmm. Number seven, grapefruit. Half a cup, 43 milligrams. Number eight, guava. One fruit, 125 milligrams.
Wow.
Yeehaw. That's a big one.
Yeah.
A kiwi, one piece. Says one piece. One kiwi fruit, 64 milligrams.
Wow, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's why kiwis are pretty sour.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
And green peppers, half a cup chopped raw, 60 milligrams.
Nice.
So your red and green peppers are really good for
yes,
you.
Yes, they are. They have vitamin C in them.
When I make those stir fries and I throw my red and green peppers in there, yeah, it's really good for you.
So it's not just citrus. So
Right. A lot of vegetables. Yes. A lot of vegetables in here.
You're going to get, if you eat a broad variety of fruits and vegetables, you're going to get good vitamin C. And then if you want to supplement with vitamin C, you can. So we'll finish off with the supplement, how you supplement with vitamin C. But anyway, high blood pressure, like we said, it's going to lower your blood pressure by strengthening and giving more integrity to the collagen in your blood vessels, making your blood vessels more resilient. And then it's going to protect against heart disease because it's going to clean up free radical damage to the intima, to the inside of the blood vessels. And so you're going to be less likely to get atherosclerotic plaques. The common cold, despite the popular belief that vitamin C can cure the common cold, it's not really what it does.
It doesn't really cure it.
It doesn't support this theory. Taking vitamin C supplements regularly, not just at the beginning of the cold, only produces a small reduction in the duration of a cold, about a day. The other piece of evidence supporting vitamin C for preventing colds comes from studies examining people exercise in extreme environments. In these studies, vitamin C did seem to reduce the risk of getting a cold. So if you're an athlete, taking extra vitamin C is a good idea. Because you're going to be more susceptible to colds and flus when you do a lot of physical activity. And that's very simple. There's a couple of reasons why. Let me see if in this list they talk about the adrenal glands.
While you're looking at that, it says here that an athlete can expect to cut the risk of getting a cold in half because athletes push themselves harder. That's according to this piece I'm reading right now.
By taking a certain amount of vitamin C.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so vitamin C, vitamin C is really important. And so what's going on there, the reason for the athletes, it's a couple of things. One, and the big one is that when you are doing a lot of physical activity, you're using your adrenal glands to produce cortisol. And you're using cortisol, epinephrine, and norepinephrine. And vitamin C supports the function of the adrenal glands. So you're pooping out your vitamin C by literally. meaning you're losing it. You're not you're using up your vitamin C in the function of the adrenal glands. And so the vitamin C is not going to be as available. It's not going to be as available to power your immune system. And that's one of the reasons you tend to get sick more if you're at a high level of activity. You're going to be more prone to getting sick. It's just that your adrenal hormones as well power your immune system, and they are supported by vitamin C. So your adrenal glands can't be as efficient, and you're using up your vitamin C in the exercise itself, and the adrenal hormones are not as available to monitor your immune system. So getting colds and stuff is a thing. And what happens when you go on the Tour de France? You hear about, this one got a cold and then everybody on the team got a cold.
Oh, I know.
This one got a GI bug and then everybody got a GI bug.
Well, they're all very vulnerable because they're pushing themselves so hard.
They are. And so even if they're taking extra supplements or vitamin C, they're at more risk.
So what about these people who load themselves up with vitamin C? They supercharge themselves. They
So it kind of depends on what's going on in your life. If you're a person that hangs around with cigarette smokers or you smoke cigarettes yourself, a few grams could be a good idea.
Mm.
If you have cancer or you're trying to protect against cancer, you might want to take bowel tolerance because, again, with cancer, you're talking about genes that have been flipped on that you don't want flipped on, and you want them to quiet down, and you don't want to have cancer genes, oncogenes expressing themselves. So you can help them to stop expressing themselves with antioxidants, and one of them is vitamin C. And so when you're in a situation like that, you talk about bowel tolerance. So bowel tolerance means you take a dose, you gradually increase your dose by, 500 or 1,000 milligrams a day, depending on the person. Talk it over with your doctor. It's a good idea. Until you get some loose stool. And once you get the loose stool, if you have loose stool, that means it's coming out the other end. So it's not useful to take that amount of vitamin C.
Your body is going to naturally get rid of anything that you've taken on that's too much.
Yeah, that's right. And vitamin C draws water to it. So one of the things... one of the things that some docs do, there's two things that natural doctors will do when people are constipated. Sometimes they will simply give high-dose vitamin C or they'll give high-dose magnesium because both of those, when you take too much of them, draw water to them and will help you go to the bathroom. If you have normal bowel movements and you take too much of them, you'll get loose stool. So at the point you get loose stool, then you back off to the last dose you took where you didn't have the loose stool, and that's the dose that you take. So that's one way to do it. So your vitamin C needs are going to depend on who you are, what you're doing, whether you're exercising, what your activities are. If you're stressed, if you have any kind of stress at all, your need for vitamin C is going to be higher. That's just the way it is. So consuming extra taking supplements, if you can't count on yourself to get your veggies and fruits every day, taking a supplement might not be a bad idea, especially if you hang around with, other people. I have to say, one of the things that I have noticed every year, I say, when people go back to school, you wait, sometime into the month of September, and certainly in October, you're going to start seeing people with colds and flus. Nope, not a thing. What I see now is the minute anyone goes back to school, we're talking late August, people start walking in with colds. It is, today is September 13th, 2017. I have already seen many people with colds and flus. You can't believe how much hand sanitizer I'm going through. I'm like hand sanitizing before the visit and after the visit. At time to start gargling and using my neti pot. And I have wonderful throat sprays. I'm using my Echinacea Golden Seal throat spray. I'm using my Propolis Astragalus throat spray. And what I need to do, I haven't done a neti pot, but I need to do that. So in terms of colds, if you have more vitamin C on board, you might be a little less likely to get a cold because it does stimulate the functioning of the immune system. Once you've got the cold, your body pretty much has to work through it. Your white blood cells have to run around, kill the viruses. Once the immune system is stimulated, you're going to get that yucky, fevery feeling. Your leukotrienes and your interleukins and your interferon, they're going to be running around powering your white blood cells to munch on those viruses and clean stuff up. And you just don't feel good while that's happening. Once the system is in play, it really can't be shut down. And so if you're taking vitamin C, to start with, if you take vitamin C while you have the actual cold, it's going to do some level of activity in terms of stimulating white blood cells to get them to work harder. But, you know, you're going to have to still deal with the cold. And you might have the cold for about a day less. And if you want to shorten the cold as well, I'm just a big fan of using a neti pot and gargling. I think that's a really good way to do it. And because you're literally cleaning out the viruses where they live, and that can help. Like we said, vitamin C is associated with reducing the rates of various cancers, skin cancer, cervical dysplasia, and cervical cancer, possibly breast cancer. And again, the way it works is because it's an antioxidant, it's going to support the healthy functioning of genes and tell oncogenes, nope, not a thing, not here, not now. So it can be helpful that way. Joints. So if you're an achy person and you have joint stuff, also if you're a major athlete and you do stuff to yourself so that you ache frequently, getting enough vitamin C on board, that's the other reason. So we talked about how athletes have a higher need for vitamin C because they're using their adrenals to power their workouts. Therefore, the adrenal hormones are not as available to power the immune system. This is another thing. When you use your muscles and joints and bones at a high level, you are also, you have a great need for repair. So you're going to need vitamin C to help to rebuild your muscles and tendons and ligaments. So your vitamin C needs, I never really put this together, that it's really, vitamin C is a very important nutrient for the athlete. And for you too, you who are listening, whoever you are, because you're stressed. You're probably stressed. If you're listening to my voice, you're probably stressed. Why? Because most of my patients are stressed. It is rare that I have a person who comes in who's not stressed. I have people say to me, I'm not stressed. And I'm like, what are you doing in your life? Well, I'm doing my job. I'm taking care of my kids. I go to my quilting class. I'm exercising. And I'm like, when I say stress, I don't mean that you're unhappy. When people say they're stressed, often there's an element of I'm not happy and something's going on in my life that's not working for me. No, if you're just very busy, you're stressed. I mean, I went out for a fabulous ride yesterday where I did, you know, 4 10-minute intervals really hard. And that was stressful. That's stress. I need vitamin C and magnesium and fish oil after that. So, all right, so let's talk about other neat stuff, your eyes. So guess what you've got in your eyes? Blood vessels. So anywhere you've got blood vessels, you're going to have a need for vitamin C. So it's going to strengthen the blood vessels in your eyes. It's going to make you see better, and you're going to be less likely to get stuff like age-related macular degeneration. It's one of the nutrients that you take to prevent that, along with stuff like zinc, beta-carotene that we talked about last week, and vitamin E, which is another antioxidant that works in tandem with vitamin C. So there's actually a study that showed that those nutrients together help to prevent AMD. Nice, huh? Preeclampsia. What's preeclampsia? It's a scary condition that happens to women usually toward the end of pregnancy or at some point during pregnancy. And they're not exactly sure what causes it, but what happens is the woman's blood pressure can go high, and it can go scary high, like life-threateningly high. And it's characterized by proteinuria. There's protein in the urine, and it can cause premature births. And sometimes if a woman is having preeclampsia, they'll prevent the premature birth and they'll just, the woman will have a C-section. But if you have adequate vitamin C and E, it may help to prevent preeclampsia. Very nice. Then asthma. So low levels of vitamin C are more common in people with asthma. And if you increase your vitamin C, you're going to be less likely to have it. Why might that be? Oh, I don't know. Again, you're helping the... you're helping the inside of the lungs to have healthier collagen. You're helping the organs to be healthier. And you're helping the blood vessels that are inside of the lungs to have more more good nutrition. And so when the tissues inside of the lungs are strengthened, they are more elastic, just like when we're talking about blood pressure. More elastic lung tissue means that you're going to be less likely to suffer the bronchoconstriction of asthma. So it's another good thing. Also, you're supporting the immune system. And the immune system, once again, if the immune system is calm and quiet, you're going to be less likely to have the inflammatory concepts that happen or the inflammatory events that happen when you're likely to have asthma go on. So there are other things that vitamin C supports. We already talked about supporting the immune system, having healthy gums, your vision, allergies. So respiratory allergies, it's the same deal. Again, vitamin C, so if you have respiratory allergies, vitamin C is important for you. Again, because it's going to strengthen the inside of your nose. It's going to strengthen your lungs. It's going to strengthen your immune system. So you're not going to be as reactive to the pollens and environmental toxins that are causing you to have allergy symptoms. So dry mouth. That's interesting. I never thought about dry mouth as a thing that vitamin C could help. Yeah.
Vitamin C and dry mouth?
Yeah.
Really?
I'm assuming, I mean, thinking of it, it doesn't say why, but I'm assuming the reason for that would be simply because it's going to improve circulation to your mouth.
Hmm.
So more circulation to your mouth means more fluid in your mouth, means more saliva.
Well, if you eat sour things too, doesn't that kind of stimulate your saliva?
Yeah. Yes, that's true. So I wonder if you ate... And it doesn't have to specifically be vitamin C to stimulate salivation. So
right.
You can do, because if you just do lemon juice has citric acid. It does have ascorbic acid in it. But sour things in general, you're right. Vinegar is going to stimulate salivation, anything like that. Right. So it may be a direct effect of sour being a sialagogue, stimulating salivation. And it may simply be that it's improving circulation to the mouth. That's a good point. Healing burns and wounds. Well, guess what's worse for oxidative damage than a burn?
Mm.
So that's where your skin has literally been oxidized.
Okay.
That's the definition of oxidation. Burning is another word. Mm. It is major superoxidation of a large area. So if you have a burn and you take vitamin C, you're going to help to heal that oxidative damage, and you're going to help to promote the rebuilding of collagen in that location. So it makes sense too. And any wounds, in fact, so you're improving circulation and you're improving the rebuilding of collagen. And so any, just even cuts, your cuts are going to heal better if you have adequate vitamin C. It can help decrease blood sugar in people with diabetes. That's very cool.
Mm.
Now, what would the mechanism there be? That's a good question.
You're the doctor.
I know. So the vitamin C is going to help to stimulate liver function. And if the liver is functioning more efficiently, the liver supports glycogen regulation and blood sugar regulation. So that may be part of it. And again, it's going to improve circulation. So if you improve your circulation, you just metabolize better and your blood cells are going to deal with sugar better. I'm assuming it's a long shot, but then I'm going to go there.
Okay.
And so specific viral conditions they're talking about, you know, using vitamin C. And one of them is the common cold. One of them is mononucleosis, which is acute Epstein-Barr virus. And so I would say that if you're trying to prevent yourself from getting viruses, having adequate vitamin C on board is a good idea. The studies vary, but they're studies. And if you think about how vitamin C works, it makes sense to use vitamin C to stimulate your immune system, stimulate your white blood cells, to strengthen the collagen, strengthen your digestive system. Your whole body is going to benefit from vitamin C. It's a really, really, really important. We didn't even get to vitamin D because that's how important vitamin C is.
I was going to say, we took up almost an entire show just on vitamin C.
So let's talk about the forms of vitamin C. So you can get vitamin C that's been extracted from plants, or you can get it synthesized. Synthesized vitamin C, you can synthesize vitamin C in a lab. It's called ascorbic acid. If you take straight up ascorbic acid, you might have no problem with it, and you might also get a tummy ache from it. Because it's an acid, and when acids hit your stomach, sometimes they give you an upset stomach. So the vitamin C can also be enhanced in ways to make it more absorbable. So one of the ways is to buffer it. And the way you buffer it is you attach it to minerals. So you get buffered ascorbates. And you know, you've heard of ester C before?
Yep.
So an ester is basically, you take an acid and you take off the hydrogen group that makes it an acid, and then you stick it onto something else. And that's an ester. So,
okay.
So you take ascorbic acid and you pop off a hydrogen and then you stick it to calcium, magnesium, or potassium, and now you have buffered ascorbates. Yeah, and so because they're no longer acids, they're not as irritating to your stomach. And your body looks at them, you know, so ester C, that product that we all know as ester C, is calcium ascorbate. So your body goes, calcium, I need that for bones and muscles and tissues and to buffer my blood and all kinds of stuff. I'll take that calcium. So your body goes, it takes the calcium and the ascorbate goes along with it. And the ascorbate's now in your body and doing all the good things that it does. Same thing with potassium and magnesium. Your body needs potassium and magnesium for all sorts of stuff. And so your body goes, yum, potassium, yum, magnesium, and hoo-ha, it gets a little ascorbate attached to it, and it gets in. And again, you get less stomach upset with that. Another thing that's popular to do, this is hot in natural medicine now, the liposome. Oh, yeah.
Mm.
So liposomal means that it's attached to a fat that helps it to absorb. Now, vitamin C is not a fat-soluble vitamin. It is water-soluble. So if you attach it to a fat, the cool thing is that you can, it'll get into fatty tissue better. And the thought is because all of your cell membranes have fat around them, it's going to get into the cells more readily. And the fat that you attach it to usually is phosphatidylcholine. Phosphatidylcholine is not actually a fat. It's a phospholipid. So a phospholipid is hydrophilic at one end and lipophilic at the other. I mean, in other words, water-soluble at one end, fat-soluble at the other.
Thank you very much.
So all of your cell membranes are covered in this stuff, which means that today, or at this moment, you need a fat-soluble vitamin. Come in, vitamin K. This moment, you need a water-soluble vitamin. Come in, vitamin C. So depending on where you hit the phospholipid, either one of them can come in. So now if you attach your vitamin C to a phospholipid, which the cell's going to go, yeah, give me some of that phospholipid, it's going to get into the cell better. So phospholipids are hot.
Okay.
Yeah. So they are often called phospholiposomal or phytosomes.
You took away my great question I was going to ask you because you said it before I asked. What? I was going to ask you about liposomal vitamin C.
Oh. Yeah, liposomes are hot.
Beat
but you
me
can,
to it again.
You can get liposomal, all sorts of stuff. You can get liposomal C. You can get curcumin phytosome. You can get many things in phytosome form that they're supposed to enhance the absorption. You get liposomal curcumin, which is similar to, you know, curcumin phytosome. Depending on who's doing the nutraceutical talking, they use either the term liposomal and phytosome are pretty similar. They're basically both phosphatidylcholine. So that's another hot thing. The other thing is to complex the vitamin C in a food base. So the vitamin C itself is extracted from food, and then you take the pill and it's compressed with actual foods that also have vitamin C in them, like acerola cherries, rose hips. We didn't talk about acerola cherries and rose hips. Rose hips, I just want to have a big shout out to rose hips before we go. So go to the beach and you'll see those scraggly roses as you're walking down to the beach. Mm. And when they make the flowers, they barely make flowers. They make these pretty little, there'll be a few petals and they'll be really scraggly. Then when the petals go away, you see these big fat, orangey red fruits or reddish orange fruits.
Mm-hmm.
Those are rose hips, and those are delicious, and it's okay to eat them. They're a little difficult to eat. The flesh is really wonderful, but they take some work because they have very spiny seeds inside. So you have to nibble away at the outside. But people, you know, will take rose hips and they'll carve away and get rid of the spiny stuff, mm-hmm. and then do stuff with them, dry them. But you can take them and eat them fresh, or you can make them into jam. They're wonderful, and they're full of vitamin C. So if you want to get a hit of vitamin C, you can just go out and eat wild rose hips. I'm always like lengthening our walks on the beach because I'm eating the rose hips as we're walking along. So anyway, so that's the take on vitamin C. You've been listening to Radio Naturopath here on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, and we will be back next week with more Radio Naturopath. If you'd like to participate in the conversation about natural medicine, you can write me anytime at radionaturopath@gmail.com. And you can also listen to us on podcast at www.whus.org. Go to the talk header and click on Radio Naturopath. You can also check out my Facebook page, Fran Storch ND, Naturopathic Physician, Radio Naturopath, and hit me up on Twitter and Instagram at Fran Storch ND. And we will be back with a repeat episode of Radio Naturopath next week. And I'll be back live in 2 weeks for more Radio Naturopath here on WHUS 91.7 FM.